We move on now to the topic of trophy hunting. Back a couple of months ago, about 20,000 of these trophy hunters were here in Las Vegas for something called the Safari Club International Convention, in which they auctioned off for $70,000, $80,000 the right to go somewhere and kill a whole variety of things. Just about any animal you can imagine was on the list. This is big money. This is not mom and pop going out into the backyard deer hunting. This is huge money. But there's been quite a backlash to trophy hunting internationally ever since the death of Cecil the Lion. Since July of 2015, 45 major airlines have decided to ban the transport of several kinds of trophy animals from Africa. And some of the African countries are also reacting and have started the process of banning export of those kind of trophies. And the tip of the spear in this fight has been the Humane Society International. And my next guest is right in the forefront of that effort. Her name is Masha Kalinina, and she's an international trade policy specialist with HSI, specializing in the wildlife trade. When we come back, we're going to jump into the whole thorny issue of trophy hunting. Stay with us. Before she worked as an international trade policy specialist with the Humane Society International, specializing in the wildlife trade, Maria Masha Kalinina was an attorney. She worked for a contractor named Booz Allen Hamilton, which provided consulting services to clients, including the Department of Defense, agencies of the intelligence community. Masha, thanks for being here with us to talk about trophy hunting. How do you make a transition from that background to this?
Well, George, first, thank you so much for having me on your show and for your excellent coverage of the Safari Club International Convention in February. The transition was interesting. It was a huge shift. I was working in the human capital sphere with Booz Allen, but it was my love for animals that really, you know, tugged at my heartstrings, and so I decided to pursue an alternative career. But really, it's been a whirlwind educating myself on the overwhelming number of issues that wild animals around the world face. It's been an interesting ride and just an educational experience.
I think you were here. I think our TV station interviewed you a couple of months ago when Safari Club was in town for its convention. Had you attended one of those before?
That's right. Yes, we did interview with you guys. And no, I have never been involved previously. And it was really, you know, Cecil that brought this issue into the spotlight and gave us the opportunity to track this more closely.
Well, looking at the agenda for that gathering and the amount of money that they raffle off these hunting trips for go kill a rhino, go kill a lion, it's big money. It's huge money.
It is. It's a huge moneymaker for SCI, this convention, and the auction of the mammal hunts. So back in February, they auctioned off over 300 different hunts, but that's all in addition to other hunts that were arranged, you know, individually with the outfitters. And so this brings in, almost $3 million to SCI and helps fund, their operation and their activities. This is extremely costly, and these auctions go for, you know, tens of thousands of dollars.
Let's talk about the Cecil case. Why did this one lion, how did that one capture so much attention and cause such an uproar?
It was an intersection of different factors. One is certainly social media, the fire with which this was able to spread around the world. The second factor is, I think, the gruesome nature of the killing, that we have so many details people usually don't have about these hunts. You know, the suffering of the animal for hours between the first time it was, shot with a bow and arrow until it was finally killed. There was, you know, approximately 10 hours went by or so. And of course, the beheading of the lion. I think this people really found this repulsive. And what I learned after is that many people thought that it was illegal to hunt lions. So people really had no clue that the United States was importing over 700 lion trophies every year on average. So I think it was the surprise, the gruesome nature, and the social media aspect.
And the fact that this lion was known, it had a name, you know, people knew it.
Absolutely. It was so important to the industry of Zimbabwe for the Hwangi National Park tourism aspect. He was known, he was loved, and so the shock also to the local community in Zimbabwe.
What's the change been for your work, your job, and your ability to make things happen as in the wake of that incident?
I think it just increased the interest of the public to learn more about this trophy hunting. This has been incredible, and it helped us prepare new studies, new reports to continue to educate the public, but also open the window to discuss this issue further with our government, with the Fish and Wildlife Service in particular, because there are some serious issues with the way that we handle imports of trophies into this country. And I think additionally, other than the United States, there's a Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Fauna and Flora. And under this convention this year, we had the European Union propose to really improve the way that trophy hunting trade is regulated under this convention. And so these have been huge major pluses that have come out of the attention Cecil brought to this issue.
Let's get into the heart of the issue. If you talk to the Safari Club International folks, they say that they are conservationists, that the money raised actually helps to conserve otherwise endangered species, protect habitat. It's good for the animals overall to shoot them.
Yeah, this is, an interesting argument. As I'd like to just start off by saying, we believe that the practice of trophy hunting is unethical, so that there is no justification for killing animals for fun. But if we get into some of the more detailed arguments, for example, that trophy hunting benefits conservation, well, there was just a report released last week from the House Natural Resources Committee by the Democratic staff on that committee, and they say, show me the money. Well, how is this really benefiting conservation if there really isn't evidence to support this? I mean, there are claims that money is being channeled into conservation, but the outcomes are not being well documented, or they're coming from biased sources. And on the logical sort of assessment of trophy hunting, one quickly understands that what's happening in Africa, for example, is just, and of course, trophy hunting doesn't just happen in Africa. It happens in New Zealand and Mexico and Argentina and throughout Europe. But if we focus on Africa, what's happening is not sustainable because you have hunting quotas that are not set up on sound science, where with the leopard population in South Africa, just this year, they banned exports of leopard trophies. That's because the country has no clue how many leopards there are. They're notoriously difficult to count. And what we're understanding is that the habitat destruction for the species has been immense. They've lost 70%+ of their habitat. And that if we don't know how many leopards there are, we cannot set a sustainable quota for that species. And this is what we heard out of South Africa this year.
We also hear the argument that the money helps to support these struggling economies. What do you think?
Yeah, indeed. So, if you look at, and I think South Africa is just a really good example because of how much they support and promote this industry, the trophy hunting industry. We see that if you compare how much this industry brings in versus the wildlife watching industry, we see that wildlife watching brings in about 2% of the national GDP. So that's a huge number, whereas trophy hunting is about 0.02%. So you're really talking about a huge gap in benefit. And so, you know, there's really no argument that trophy hunting is a better conservation tool than just wildlife watching. So and for the local communities, that's often another argument, is that this is helping feed the local communities and you know, puts extra money in their pockets. We had a study done in 2012 with several other NGOs that showed that these outfitters really are only giving 3% of what they make to the local communities. So there's just really no proof of this.
Yeah, I was wondering, do the local communities eat lions? I mean, so some rich American dentist goes and kills a lion and cuts the head off and gives the rest of the body to the local population. Do they eat lions?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not, I don't believe that they eat lion, but there are many other trophy hunted animals that are eaten. For example, elephant, certainly buffalo, and other species. And you often hear from hunters, well, you know, I killed the animal, I gave the meat to the locals. But there are diseases that that wild animals spread to human beings, and that's an issue you often find with bushmeat. So that's actually an unexplored area. Is, you know, we really, if in fact we're providing meat or providing safe meat to these communities.
Is there an argument to be made in specific examples of like where places where there's an overpopulation of lions, or where you need hunting to control populations of elephants that are destroying crops, things of that sort?
Yeah, so this is the population control argument often brought forward, and there was recently an incident in the Babai Valley Conservation Area in Zimbabwe, where they've argued that they need to call, I think it was approximately 2,000 lions in order to ensure that that population is sustainable, and they wanted to do it through trophy hunting. Well, in these intensive, so this was actually an enclosed wildlife area. In these intensively managed areas, trophy hunting is never a sustainable solution, because that will, the population will just rebound. So it actually creates a revolving door of cruelty, where you pull the population numbers back, the numbers rise, and then you have to call all over again, which certainly sounds nice to trophy hunters and people that make money off of this kind of business. But in fact, what you need to do is institute sustainable management practices in these types of areas, like contraception. This is something we help fund in South Africa for the elephant population, actually, because you can, one, an area can only sustain so many animals, and you want to avoid culling. And this method of population control through contraception has been, immunocontraception, has been extremely successful.
Masha, you mentioned about leopards in South Africa. Are there studies to suggest that trophy hunting in particular is putting any species at risk? I don't know how many lions there are left, but whether or not the populations become at risk, or at least in some parts of Africa or other parts of the world, when there's too much of this hunting going on.
Yeah, there are multiple studies like this, and one example is a study by biologist Dr. Craig Packer in Tanzania, where he worked for many, many years studying lions, and he in fact found that because of the levels of corruption, the management of the species in Tanzania was not sustainable, meaning the exercise of the trophy hunting as a management tool is not sustainable. So we have a very well-known scientist and in fact, his reveal of the corruption in Tanzania resulted in him being kicked out by the government, and he's no longer able to do research in this country. So that's just one example of lions, and he's demonstrated decline in the species due to trophy hunting.
Do you see a moral difference between this trophy hunting for big game in Africa and, say, deer hunting here in the U.S.? I know there are deer populations that do get out of control, that hunters, number one, that there are families that rely on it for meat as food, and two, that without hunting, that the populations could get out of control. Do you buy that, first of all, and then do you see a difference between what goes on here domestically, practical hunting and using it for food versus trophy hunting?
Well, one, it's important to draw a distinction between just hunting and trophy hunting, because trophy hunting is really, it's the chase and kill of a wild animal primarily for the purpose of obtaining a body part for display or bragging rights or winning an award from Spark Club International for your kill. So you're not killing that animal for any kind of sustenance. The meat may be consumed by perhaps locals in Africa, but that's just not the reason why this animal is being killed. And let's also remember that this is really a hobby of the 1%. These are extremely wealthy individuals that sometimes fly on their private jets to Africa for these kinds of hunts. You have to be able to afford, you know, if you're not, if you don't have a private jet, a plane ticket, your lodging, you know, and certainly these hunts that can be as expensive as, you know, $70,000-$100,000. So these aren't just your regular hunters, like what you've described with the deer hunters in the United States. I think and you've asked, you know, do I buy the argument? I think that there are challenges that arise with deer hunting in the United States. If hunters are also seeking to control predator populations so that they can sustain the deer populations or those of other species they like to hunt that also predators like wolves would also depend on. So
you know, in other words, people going out and killing mountain lions because they don't want a mountain lion eating a buck, a trophy buck that they might be able to get during hunting season.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So, and there are also some captive hunts here in the United States. So, where these large bucks are actually bred for, you know, their antlers, and so, you know, trophy hunter doesn't. Well, this is sort of mixing things a little bit, but if you know, some of these bucks are killed also as trophies for their antlers, and so when you have a intensively managed population like this, there can also be spread of disease. And that can also then spread to wild animals. So there are several issues with that type of hunting in the U.S.
Captive hunts are still legal? I mean, where they, you know, they have these animals in enclosures of some sort, and you're the great brave hunter to go into a fenced area and kill something?
Yeah, it's not only legal, it's extremely popular throughout Texas. You will also find that in Texas you can hunt extinct animals. You can hunt, you know, endangered animals that are bred on farms exclusively for hunting purposes. So, you know, one example is the endangered Bontebok animal. So that there is quite a bit of that happening in the U.S.
We're talking with Masha Kalinina about trophy hunting internationally and some of the issues involved. When we come back, we're going to open up the phone lines, see if you want to jump into this conversation. Also, we're going to talk about how the airlines, so many airlines, 45 at the last count, were convinced that they should stop transporting these trophy heads, and whether or not these hunters would pay $70,000 or $80,000 to go to Africa if they weren't allowed to bring the body parts back. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. While the Beatles were in India studying with a Maharishi, they encountered this trophy hunter. His real name was Rick, but apparently while they were there at the same time, this Rick guy went after a tiger. He got a team of other hunters on elephants. They went into the jungle, killed this tiger, and it inspired John Lennon to write this song about Bungalow Bill. Apparently, what I've read is the real guy, Rick, was a transformative experience for him. He had a photo taken of himself with the dead tiger, and then afterward realized what he had done and never hunted again. We're talking with Masha Kalinina about trophy hunting in general, the amount of money it supposedly generates for the purpose of conservation, whether or not that's really the intention of the guys who pony up 70, 80, 100 grand to go kill one of the so-called big five species is subject to considerable debate. When we come back, I have a couple more questions, then we'll get to some of your calls and comments as well. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Last year, a Minnesota dentist named Walter James Palmer traveled to Zimbabwe and killed Cecil the Lion. We've discussed some of the gruesome details already. Masha, do you know what became of Walter Palmer? I know there was discussion for a while that he might face charges in Africa, or his guides might have faced charges. I know there was discussion about Safari Club kicking him out. What became of him, do you know?
One thing we know is that he was a few months, just maybe 4 months, after being kicked out of Safari Club International, because he was indeed a member. He was reinstated quietly by this group, and is now again a member of SCI.
So they like did that for show then, huh?
I don't know. They have an ethics committee that reviewed his case, and in one of their publications they said that the ethics committee did not find any misconduct. So he was reinstated. And I don't know if this was for show, because it was actually very small mention. And I think they actually maybe tried to keep this under wraps, because it doesn't look too good for the public to know this.
Of course, we know that his dental practice was picketed. He got all kinds of nasty emails and messages, and the public sort of made an example of him. I guess that's the difference in this case. The shaming of this guy, the shaming of trophy hunters in general, it seems to have had an impact, or at least I'd hope to think it would.
Yes, that's right. It's an important element when the public speaks out, but I just want to caution, because certainly Walter Pomler is not the only trophy hunter. There are thousands and thousands of animals killed every year by very different individuals, and so we don't want to vilify one particular person, although he has become the face. And I want to caution what people say, because it can become an issue that's very sensitive for folks, and so we don't want to make people feel afraid of the public. But I think that the shaming element is key, because what the trophy hunters are doing is really boasting about these skills on, for example, Facebook, and really feeling proud of this. But one thing that comes to mind is that children can see these images too, and this is really deeply troubling, that where you have slaughter like this celebrated and flaunted on social media, and really there's just no, and previously up to now it's completely acceptable. And I think that it's important for people to say that no, we don't find this to be acceptable. We're disgusted by this.
Masha, it sort of boils down to the heads, doesn't it? If these guys would not be paying 70, 80, 100 grand to go to Africa to kill something, if they couldn't bring the head back, because they want to be able to put it on the wall and show their buddies, it just suggests to me that it's not being done because they want to help Africans or they want to help conservation. It's because they want to be able to brag about it.
Absolutely. That is definitely the primary motivation, and we know this to be the case, because Safari Club International has an award system, a very well-designed award system that celebrates, for example, if you kill a certain number of big cats of the world, or you kill a certain North American species, or you kill the Africa Big Five, as often discussed. So with this, so number one, they want to be able to record the size of these animals. They want to document the weight of the animal they've killed, and certainly display the trophy for friends. And really, there's quite a bit of pride in what is often a very, very easy kill. These hunts are guaranteed. You can go, previously up until the listing of the lion, you could go to South Africa, kill a lion in 3 days in a canned hunt, or which is a fenced enclosure where lions have been bred just for this kill, and bring yourself a trophy within 3 days, having never hunted anything but deer. So it's I don't know how you can be proud of something like this.
Has the 45 airlines who've decided they're not going to transport these trophies anymore, has it made a dent? Has it made a difference? Or do the trophy hunters find a way to get their heads back to this country?
It's certainly made a difference. And we know this because, for example, the Delta prohibition on the transport of the Big Five was challenged in court in Texas. And the principal person was Corey Knowlton, who you may recall. There's quite a bit of news just 2 years ago. He won an auction to pay $350,000 to kill a black rhino in Namibia. And He sued Delta, and this case was just a few weeks ago dismissed by the court. And we wouldn't see these kinds of challenges if hunters didn't feel threatened by these prohibitions. Although I do remain skeptical. I think that, you know, these are clever folks. They'll find ways to transport these trophies, you know, whether that's charter planes or other carriers. That fortunately they will find ways to bypass. That's why we need more airlines, all airlines that fly out of Africa to pass these prohibitions.
Maybe you can help us come up with a list. We'll post it later, a list of the airlines that have not gone along with this ban, and we'll let the public know about that so that the flying public can pass along their opinions about it. Let's take a couple of calls. Josie in Wisconsin has been on the phone for a while. Hi, Josie.
Hi, George. Thank you so much for what you're doing. I have this show on and other times that you've done it. What, you know, my concern is, you know, I'm a senior citizen, and I truly don't feel that there is that much difference. It takes all these years to get elephants out of the circus. And like she was mentioning, I know all about the can hunting. I just found out, you know, where they club baby seals. I found out through one of my animal groups that they have spikes on those clubs. You know, I mean, there's something wrong with humanity. If people were truly outraged, and it would not even be happening. I hate to say that, you know, and it takes so long, and they find more evil ways to do the cruelty to these helpless. Every animal on this planet is helpless because of our weaponry, and the way they kill them is just, I don't know where, you know, there's. And
well, Josie, let's let Masha get involved here. I think Masha, where she was heading was just in talking about something that you touched on, is that the motivation for these trophy hunters has little to do with conservation, nothing to do with helping Africans or impoverished people, nothing to do with feeding people the meat from these conquests. It's all about bloodlust, isn't it? Sort of.
Yes, absolutely, and I thank the caller for her passion. I think that, you know, she is one of many that are really troubled by the cruelties to animals in this world, and certainly, you know, trophy hunting is just one example. But I do think that, you know, there's hope. I believe you had our CEO Wayne Pacelli earlier on the show.
Yes.
And and he, you know, he talked about his book, The Humane Economy, and I think that when we help the private sector, for example, understand that it is in their interest to make humane choices for animals, we're really creating a shift in society. I mean, this is, it's just but one example of the, it's a symptom of the changing attitude to animals. And I really think that in this century, we're going to see unbelievable strides made to improve animal lives. So I do want to give the caller some hope.
There are studies, right, about the economic impact of ecotourism that compare the effect of, say, a photo safari and people coming to see the animals in their natural environment alive versus the benefits or so-called economic benefits of generated by hunters who come there to kill them. I would think that the benefits of ecotourism far outweigh the economic benefits of hunting.
Indeed. What we know is, for example, that wildlife watching is a business that can be operated year-round, whereas hunting can only take place during a hunting season. And and if there's a quota, it can only take place until the quota has been met. So not only is the year-round nature of the ecotourism, but also ecotourism employs a lot more people. The outfitters that offer trophy hunting are quite small. They're in remote locations, not always, but I mean, sometimes outfitters are right near huge national parks like Kruger. So the point is that essentially ecotourism hires and employs more people, can operate year-round, and really offers much, much greater benefits to the communities where trophy hunting takes place.
first-time caller, Greg, in Florida. Hi, Greg. You're on with Masha.
Hi, George. First-time caller. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
All right. I have a couple points, a couple questions I'd like to discuss. It seems that some of the things you have been talking about are a little contradictory. First of all, and let me point out that I am not a person that can afford $50,000 to $100,000 on a hunt, okay? I'm
that
a worker
two of us.
Here in
Three
America
of us.
Who has hunted now and then throughout his life. When you have people paying up to $100,000 for a hunt and guaranteed their primary objective is not to help the economies, it is well documented that a lot of those funds go towards the game preserve wardens that actually protect animals from poaching. It's well documented. There's no argument there.
Well, let's ask Masha about that. That's an important point. And I've heard it a lot of times that it makes sense to the money would go to help conserve the animals because these guys want to come back and kill more of them.
Well, and thank you for the question, caller. I think the point is that there are alternative ways to generate similar volume of money toward these expenses, like game wardens and protecting these parks from poachers. So that trophy hunting isn't the only way to generate this kind of money. We really need to understand that ecotourism could absolutely serve this identical purpose. So why to turn to an unethical practice when there's a perfectly ethical way to generate this money? And I've already mentioned that this ecotourism brings 2% of South Africa's GDP and trophy hunting only 0.02.
So, Greg, I think that partially answers. Did you want to respond?
I would definitely like to. Ecotourism is a money generator for those parts of the world that trophy hunting has engaged. But a person that gets off a plane and gets onto a Jeep and takes a little safari is no way near spending up to $100,000 for these hunts, not to mention equipment, gear, travel, the money that's generated here in the States for the preparation before they're even on the plane on their way over there.
Yeah, but how does that help the Africans?
Because
how does the money that he spends here in his plane trip, how does that help the game warden to preserve species in a way that that ecotourism wouldn't?
It does not. But in contrary, what she was talking about, sustainable hunting and calling animals, and then the population rises again, and then there's another need for hunting. That's sustainability. That's continued income for those countries. And many, many of those animals that are hunted are herding animals in the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of numbers.
I think we're mostly talking about the big five here, the lion, and I don't know what all the is of lion, rhino, elephant. What's the others, Masha?
Leopard, so rhino, elephant, leopard, buffalo.
I think what Greg is saying is there's a heck of a lot of buffalo.
Yes. Well, I think what's important to note is you can't just talk about the 100,000 and make a one-to-one comparison to one ecotourist. Certainly there's a difference there and what the one ecotourist would spend. But when you sum everything up in terms of the volume of ecotourism and its benefit to these communities, it's far, far outweighs trophy hunting.
Greg, I appreciate the call. I have read some pretty good studies that compare the economic benefits of the two, and it sure looks like Masha's position is more defensible, but maybe you can send us, if you've got some other additional information, you can send it to us, and I can revisit this at some other point. We're going to try one more call. Elaine in Fort Myers, Florida. Hi, Elaine. You're on with Masha. Better make this a quick one.
Hi. Good morning. Yep, I'll be quick. I'm an animal lover. It's obvious as the blue skies that humans are systematically destroying all the earth and animals for money or pride or abuse or sport and fun. But eventually the chickens will come to roost. That's no pun intended. Humans will destroy themselves for money. What a tragedy for all of life on our beautiful earth. That's all. Thank you.
Thanks, Elaine. Masha, you want to address sort of the big picture?
Yeah, I mean, it is sometimes overwhelming to think about, for example, global warming, which is really one of the biggest drivers to habitat destruction, and generally, you know, is a threat to the survival of all species in the world, and obviously humanity is to blame. And certainly the way we've cut down forests, another habitat destruction example for all wildlife, systematic slash and burn of forests in Indonesia that's wiping out orangutan habitat, documented and in the news as of late. It can become overwhelming, but we just need to not let that deter us from keeping the good effort. And I think that what we've talked about, the humane economy and just shifting attitudes, really gives me some hope.
Masha, anything else that our listeners might be able to do? You are sort of the tip of the spear in the fight against trophy hunting internationally. What can they do to help you?
Well, I think folks can go to our website, hsi.org, /issues/trophy_hunting. Or you can just Google Humane Society International and trophy hunting, you'll land on our page. And we have ongoing actions, whether they are directed to Fish and Wildlife Service or to the parties to the Convention on the International Trade in Endangered Species. We have multiple reports and other information on our website, so we hope that folks will visit and take action as it comes up on our website.
Masha Kalanina, thanks very much for being here. You're doing great work.
No problem. Thank you for having us on your show, George.
All right. Thank you. We'll be back in the next hour, our final hour, to talk about horse issues, wild horses, domestic horses going to slaughter, what you might think about that. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM.